Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Greetings, travelers.
Greetings, travelers. We're here.
We are. We're here. And it's nearing the almost the beginning, technically, of spooky season. Like when this airs, it will be spooky season. So it's perfect. Yeah. But we are recording it right before the official launch of Spooktember.
Okay. Well, I like to think spooky season starts in February, but that's just me. So
you think spooky season starts in January. So.
No, it ends in January and then starts again in February.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. I love that. With that said, of course, me and you've already been Halloween shopping because that's a thing we already started doing.
Yeah. Which, no, do we ever stop?
That's, yeah. Again, no, but they actually put new stuff out, so it's not us being creepers in the back of spooky things. So I'm excited. Yeah.
Did you see as a Costumes Express, you know how they have everybody, Home Depot has the giant skeletons and all that?
Yeah.
Costumes Express has a 12-foot Mothman animated. So that, might have to happen.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's kind of exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah. I'm excited for that.
Well, I don't want to wait too long. Do we have any news? No.
Yeah, the breaking news has been that everybody's still afraid of that asteroid that, or the comet that's coming from another interstellar space, and some scientists, like three of them, have said that it might be an interstellar probe of some sort, and that gets the headlines every couple weeks. So, say, guys, come on. We finally got better satellites. We're spotting these things better than we ever did. That's all it is. Please.
That's true. We do have one other bit of breaking news, which was just disgusting and terrifying, which is that there's the first human case of flesh-eating screwworms.
Yeah, in first human case in U.S.
Yeah.
In U.S.
So that's delightful. Yeah. We'll post a link to that in the show notes. So just in case you want to be thoroughly grossed out, travelers, and never go out in public again, that is happening.
Yeah, so. And they are spreading what infertile flies around to try to make it so that they don't go any further. But it worked in the 60s. We'll see if it works again. So
yes, well, we all know reintroducing stuff that's not in the environment goes so well every time we do that.
Great, great. Yes. As we look out at the kudzu on the walls beside us.
Yeah, 60% of the time it works 100% of the time. Yeah.
And just avoid those Africanized bees. But we've got a guest.
We've
been waiting patiently.
I know. Let's bring him on. But Mark, I think I'm going to do the introduction.
Hands off.
Okay. We have with us the incomparable. Do you see that? Incomparable. Chris McKinnell. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Incomparable. Wow. That. Okay. I'm not able to live up to that one, but I'll go with it.
You know,
just take it, Chris. Take it.
Okay. So, Mark, because we got to let you loose a little bit and then rein you in, who is Chris?
Well, I'm going to let Chris introduce himself in a minute, but I'm just going to say we've met him once at Phantasm in Orlando, was where we met physically, but I think we've actually talked a little bit off and on over the years. But Chris goes way back in paranormal investigation. I think he's probably been doing it about as long as I have, if not a little longer, because he was kind of born into it. So, but we'll let him discuss that. So, Chris, tell the people at home who don't know who you are, who you are.
Okay. Well, I am the director of the Warren Legacy Foundation for Paranormal Research. I carry on the work of my grandparents, Ed and Lorraine Warren, all around the world. We are an organization that my grandmother and I started back in 2013, right after the first Conjuring movie came out, and we're the only organization authorized by my grandmother to do so. I've been working on cases now since August of 1981, so I just hit my 44 years, and you're right, I was born into this. I didn't really have a choice.
That was actually going to be my first question was, you know, sometimes people want their, you know, their family to go into the quote unquote family business. And sometimes they're like, no, just stay the heck away from this. Which direction did your grandparents go and your parents?
Oh, my mother hates the paranormal. She has nothing at all to do with it. She's terrified of it. No one in my family has any connection to this work. I have to say, probably you have to understand, I was locked in the museum when I was about 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old. And I was only in there for a couple of minutes, but it was nighttime. I was, you know, a toddler, and I started screaming my head off. My grandfather was in his office in the back, and he came and rescued me. But I grew up hearing whispers, feeling entities around me. I was terrified. And I started going on lecture tours with my grandparents when I was 14. I had already started questioning everything and going to different churches and trying to understand the mind of God. Wow, that was egotistical of me.
For a 14-year-old, I mean, I'm just...
Oh, no, I started that at 10. I was...
wow.
Yeah, but yeah. I watched my grandmother in front of the house when I was 14. We were on one of these news magazines that used to be on at 7:30 at night. I think it was Inside Edition or PM Magazine out in Ohio or something. And we weren't even allowed in the house. And my grandmother stood out front talking about everything that was going on in this house. No publicity had been done. There was a local reporter there who had prepared a story he hadn't printed. He only had his notes. And as my grandmother's talking about this apparition of a big fat man with a bloody apron, he looked like a butcher, or the smell of rotting flesh coming out of the kitchen, or all sorts of stuff that I no longer remember. I mean, granted, you know, it was ages ago. The reporter is going down through his notes and he's showing me that my grandmother's hitting all of the high notes. And I'm like, wow, my grandmother is a superhero. It blew my mind. And then when I was 16, I was still afraid of the dark, still unable to sleep without the light. And my grandfather calls me one night and says, Chris, I'm taking you on a case tonight. I was like, he had never discussed it with me. It wasn't something I ever thought I was going to do. And my grandmother wasn't there, but it was an over-the-top poltergeist case straight out of Hollywood. I mean, upside-down crucifix hanging in the bathroom, two hulking black shapes walking down the stairs, pounding in the walls and clawing and growling. The woman was clawed right in front of us and blood dripping off of her cheek. A pot with holy church incense flew across the room at my head, just missed me. The lights going on and off, the chair I had been sitting in flipping across the room at me. After that, I really didn't have a choice. This was my life. I needed to understand what I had just been through. But I will say this. That was the greatest gift anybody ever gave me in my life. My grandfather cured me of my fear. He threw me in the fire and I came out tempered. It was extraordinary. I went to bed that next night without the light on, and I've never been afraid of the paranormal.
Nice.
That is amazing. Nice. Because I think that would have the opposite effect on me and I would never sleep again. Because that would. So I just have to say, this whole being locked in the museum at 3, I feel like that is the opening of an epic movie.
Wasn't it the Annabelle movie?
Yeah.
They've been using portions of my life for for those movies. The next one is a case I worked on with my grandparents, and they've got somebody else who's going to be introduced as in my role.
In your role, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. That same thing with The Haunting in Connecticut. I was the lead investigator on that case. I lived in the house for 9.5 weeks straight, and they made a movie about it, and I had no idea until it came out. It was weird.
Yeah. So with that, I do have to, you know, as we love movies here on Erin Travels, we always do movie recommendation lists and stuff like that. But how is it? Because not a lot of people that you talk to have their real life on the screen, right? And we all know that they fictionalize stuff and they make it for Hollywood and stuff. But has that been kind of weird seeing the stuff that you were actually a part of on the screen?
Unbelievably weird. I mean, I didn't get through more than the first 40 minutes of The Haunting in Connecticut. And I am not even going to bother with this next movie because I already know it's completely fictional. The first Conjuring film I really enjoyed. I thought, that's pretty good. My grandparents had never talked about that case, not once. But it's other than the fact that my grandfather did an exorcism, which that never happened. Other than that, it seemed very realistic. Then we get into the second one where they have Amityville and Enfield and the nun, and that was all fantasy.
Yeah.
The same thing with the third one. The Annabelle movies, you know, they're based on Annabelle, but there isn't a shred of truth in any of those movies. Not even the tiniest amount. Oh, and the nun does not exist. What does exist is the character known as Frenchie. His real name was Maurice Theriault. That was another one of my cases with my grandparents. Mm. And that one changed my life. My grandfather had his first heart attack during that exorcism.
Yeah. Wow. I think I read that in one of the books that they wrote. And I was like, oh, man.
Satan's Harvest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was in the audition to that one as well. I didn't like the publicity, so I asked them to no longer use my name on that, The Haunted, and In a Dark Place. It was because of In a Dark Place. That book was just awful. It was not realistic. The author ignored all our notes, all of everything that happened, and he turned it into this lurid fantasy that was just made me want to run away from the public.
Yeah, the ghostwriters... Took leeway with a lot of the stuff. I remember that. So
it depends on which one was writing. I mean, Gerald Brittle, he did a great job with The Devil in Connecticut and The Demonologist. And Satan's Harvest. That was written by two Boston Globe reporters, and they did a great job. They really did.
No, when I met your grandparents, I was a kid. And I had been writing Hans Holzer about the Enfield poltergeist because I had been writing Morris. And then they were like, oh, you should really talk to the Warrens. They were there. And I'm like, who are these people? I had no idea. This is late 70s, early 80s. And I was 9 or 10. So I don't remember. And my dad took me, Lorraine invited me over. And my dad drove me from West Virginia to your house and their house. And then they took me in to show me the box from Enfield, and it was very nice of them. I walked right by Annabelle, didn't know who she was, anything, didn't care. I was just happy. And it was so funny. My dad just drops me off these old people's house. You know, it was the late 70s. Nobody cared.
Yeah. You were in safe hands. They were awesome.
So sweet. So sweet. And, but that's, I can only imagine being locked in there at some point against my will, but it was very cool. And that was, they were so open and so friendly about everything. And that was great. And I had no idea about Amityville or anything that was in the works at that point. But that's when I saw the movies. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. This is completely different than what I know of them.
So, yeah. Yeah. I think that Vera, she had a lot of respect for my grandmother. They loved one another. So I think she's lovely. And Patrick is a terrific man and everything, but I don't see my grandparents when I see them. I just see two great actors.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they'd called it something else. They, you know, if they just called them, you know, made up names or, you know, recast them, as it were.
They actually did that once. The movie, and you can find it on YouTube. It's the Demon Murder Case with Kevin Bacon and Andy Griffith. Yep. And Andy Griffith is playing the Ed Warren part in that movie. It is the Arne Johnson Conjuring 3 case.
Yep. I didn't even think about that. You're right. I forgot about that. So, all right.
I'm telling you, 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. Everything is 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. Yeah. No matter what, we are 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. Before you ask your question, this is me butting in. I have a question because we talk about all these objects in the museum and you got to be around them firsthand. And people talk about Annabelle in the box and this. Is there anything that was stood out to you more that is like not talked about at all? Like an object that you were like, this is the object that people should be talking about. So
there are so many things in there. You know, I consider that building the Chernobyl of the paranormal world. And it breaks my heart that it's now being turned into a tourist attraction. My grandparents spent their lives protecting people from these things. You know, Mark, you got to go in there, but you can attest to the fact this was not a public place. It was by special invitation. It was always, you know, do not touch anything. That, you know, do be respectful, that kind of thing. There's the piano from the Phelps Mansion. That's a great one because the Phelps haunting in Stratford, Connecticut was one of the first reported poltergeist cases in the United States. It was from like 1850s and Reverend Phelps. And that piano would play by itself. Now, I never heard it do that. I don't think it ever did it when it was with my grandparents. And then, of course, there's the satanic idol that stands about 7 or 8 feet tall. That was actually one of my cases. And that was a pretty bad one. It was another possession case. Now, possession is incredibly rare. I've had over 10,000 cases in my life around the world. And I've only dealt with about 12 possession cases.
When everything's a demon, nothing's a demon, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my question to you was then immediately was, you know, so you worked with the family. When did you start doing your own investigations?
Oh gosh. College. I mean, I was still working with my grandparents, but there were little things that would come up because I was doing lectures while I was in college, and people would come to me and tell me things and I'd be like, okay, let me check it out. You know, but I guess I really was off on my own when I was about 26. That was when I started traveling the world. And I started by going to, well, my grandparents and I had gone to Great Britain earlier when I was 21, and we did a tour, 3,000 mile tour of all of England and Scotland. And wow, what an amazing experience. You know, when you're traveling with Ed and Lorraine Warren and you're going into all of these haunted locations, I promise you, you're going to see stuff. But my favorite memory, I know I'm not answering your question yet. I will.
That's fine.
My favorite memory of that is such a simple one. We were in a pub in Devon, in the southeastern or southwestern coast of the country. And we were having lunch. And my grandmother looks out the front window and she sees Roman centurions marching by. But she can only see them from the chest upward because the rest of them is underground. So said something to the woman who owns the pub, and the lady was lovely. She said, "Oh, that makes perfect sense. The Roman road is about 4 or 5 feet below the main road that's out there today." It's like, wow, that just blew my mind.
Yeah, that's why history is so important behind these things. People go, "Oh, this doesn't make sense," and then you're like, "Oh, wait, it does if you know the history." So that's exactly why I'm
like ghosts flying through the air. Nope, they're walking on a floor that you can't see.
There was a mound here, or there was a, you know, a stone wall here. Yep.
Yep.
So, oh gosh. Yeah.
But right, now, I started going on my own investigations when I moved to Europe and then the Middle East. I had one in the City of the Dead in Cairo that was chilling. I was I had made friends with two young men who were pizza cooks in a shop, and they took me on a tour of the city the day before I was leaving. Now, the City of the Dead is an ancient cemetery, but people live there. The poor who can't live anywhere else. And they've got electricity and water and everything else. But there are tombs there that are off limits because the jinn protect them. And one woman told me this heartbreaking story about her child playing on one of these tombs, forbidden tombs. And she screamed. She was terrified. She screamed for her child to get off the tomb. It startled the kid. And I don't remember if it was a boy or a girl. And the child fell off of the tomb back where they couldn't be seen. And they were never found again. They were just gone.
I've heard other stories in that area that of just vanishings. And everybody's, yeah. Oh, it's just because they're poor. We don't talk about that. Yeah, they just.
Isn't that terrible? Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah,
everybody is the same in the eyes of God. You know, we're all just flickering fireflies. We shouldn't be elevating one over another or putting one down. And we all deserve respect.
Yeah. And now you have done some exorcisms yourself, I understand.
I have, but it wasn't anything I ever thought I would do. And it's not something I'd like to do. I've done four. Wow. Yeah. But again, I'm not a Catholic. I'm not even a Christian. I found my faith when I accepted my ignorance. You know, I had heard NASA say that there are more living worlds in the universe than grains of sand on Earth. And it was at that point I realized, Chris, stop trying to understand the mind of God. It's just a little too big for you to comprehend.
Yeah.
And my faith came in understanding that whatever God is, its perspective has to be far greater than mine. And I just have to trust that I will be put in the right place at the right time. So at one point, there was a man coming under possession. I had no choice. And the weird thing is, it was done remotely. Oh. I did it over the internet, that first one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it worked.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Energy is energy. You can use it anywhere. So that's.
Well, yeah. I mean, God's not limited by whether or not I'm there. It's not about me. So.
Yeah. It's intention. Intention is everything.
Yes. And the ritual to focus your faith. Yeah. Those are the three keys. It works for prayer. It works for curses. It works for magic. I hate magic. I hate the idea of magic. To me, it's quantum physics. It's energy manipulation. It's the same as Reiki. Or any other form of energy manipulation. That's the only way my mind can comprehend it.
That's where we're at. We like to do the Shirley Jackson term, preternatural, where it's just stuff we don't understand yet. Someday we will. And quantum entanglement and all that. We're starting to realize, okay, this is real. And, you know, yeah. And
that's what I'm writing a book that takes the paranormal and quantum physics and cultural anthropology and mysticism and everything, and tries to actually look at reality and examining really big questions. Obviously, I'm going to talk about my grandparents. I'm going to talk about different cases, but I'm going to use those in a way that illustrates some fundamental questions that we should be looking at. I mean, I've seen quantum physical effects on the Newtonian, on the physical plane. How is that possible? According to our current understanding, it shouldn't be. And yet I've been levitated over the stairs in the Smurl house. I've been picked up with a bed with my cousin and thrown across the room. I've had the brakes go out on my car right after I freed a family. And many, 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 many other things have happened. And none of those should be explainable by ordinary understood science. But that's the thing about science. we're always learning. And if we treat the paranormal, the study of the paranormal, as a through a religious lens, it's very myopic. We're not actually seeing anything. We have to have a broader perspective. My grandparents taught me that. Everybody thinks, oh, how dare you say something that Ed and Lorraine didn't say? Well, which Ed and Lorraine? 1940s Ed and Lorraine, 1970s Ed and Lorraine, 1990s? You know, they're constantly learning and adapting. My grandfather, God bless him, he thought Satanism and witchcraft were exactly the same thing up until around 1990. And he was dead set against my using psychology, you know, because in the 1970s, he hated parapsychology. He felt that it took God out of the equation and that was wrong. But over time, he changed. And that's the thing that people don't understand. Don't look at their old interviews or read their old books and think you're getting anything other than a snapshot in time.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of this, you know, the field we're in, that we're all trying to research and gather. You know, I am a folklorist. I like going back to the old folklore and everything. And you start realizing, okay, this is how they explained something unusual happening. You know, that's where we get the term wild man instead of Bigfoot. That's where we get the term, you know, poltergeist or things like that instead of a disturbance or something like that. And
I love it because that, to me, that says everything. Man is a storyteller. We hate the unknown and we need to come up with some kind of explanation. We would rather believe in the devil than the deal with the unknown because the devil has rules. And yeah. I love that. Yeah, it's you're right. And this is what I've discovered around the world is these things will manifest according to the cultural beliefs and the spiritual beliefs of the people I'm dealing with. Or perhaps they will manifest according to people who've been there previously.
Yeah, because they've just imprinted on that.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. Wow. Because all time is now. And once it's imprinted, it's there. As long as we've kept conscious tether to that moment, which is why, for instance, we don't see caveman ghosts or battles that we didn't know anything about historically. We'll experience Gettysburg. We'll experience the Tower of London because consciously we're still aware of those events. So we're keeping that channel open through time. Whereas other events that have been lost to us, they fade and that tether is gone.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I know we're going to have to take a break in a moment, but I'm curious, do you, obviously, you know, the home museum, whatever thing, but do you have a safe space that you're now keeping objects and stuff that need to be removed from people's houses? You don't have to tell me where. I'm just curious if you've recreated that in a different place, because I'm assuming these things just can't be out in the world.
No, I don't. And I have a better way of dealing with it. If you have something that has negative energy attached to it, take it far from any house, dig a hole a foot deep, put it in the ground, consecrate the ground with whatever beliefs you use, whether it's Florida water, holy water, blessed salt, whatever, and never return to it. The earth will absorb those negative energies and protect people from them forever. You do not need to collect these. I am dead set against people. It's the worst part of my grandparents' legacy. They never, ever should have called it a museum because it wasn't. It was a place to quarantine those energies from the public. It was a place of learning. Today, people are going in there expressly to connect with these things. It's like, what are you doing? There is nothing, nothing at all positive in that building.
Wow.
Well, there you go, Erica. He's got a nope for you.
Yeah, he's got an absolute nope, and I appreciate that. But with that, we're going to take a moment, and we'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Destiny Beard, the lyrical soprano who will haunt your dreams. With her alluring melodies and intricate harmonies, this dark siren of wistful song shall capture your soul and lead you into the night. Check out Destiny's new single, The Haunting Is Over, with international musicians Sam Haynes and Gary Bennett, as well as her other musical works at destinybeard.com.
Yay, we're back.
We are. That's great.
We always get a sip of our drink and then put it down and we're back, and then Bo doesn't kill us.
And then Chris said we're back, so that means he's part of the show now. He's now
co-host. I appreciate that. Somebody else to go into spooky places with you, Mark, where I don't have to. So I have a question about some places that are kind of talked about, and I'd love to have your theory if you don't mind. Like, Mark tricked me into going into Trans-Allegheny, and I consider myself a bit of an empath, and Mark can tell you the reactions I was like, there was a point, like, I didn't actually get far into there. We got into the gift shop, which is right inside the door, because I started tasting like dusty charcoal, like my mouth was fit, like it was just not good. And I spent the whole time, because I do different protections of my own, like kind of like, nope, you don't get to come with me, nope. And then finally I was like, no, we have to go, this is too much. But have you been to Trans-Allegheny or places like that?
Oh, you're not gonna like my answer. I am not a fan of paranormal tourism. Don't get me wrong. If I'm in a different country, I want to learn how things are manifesting there. But if I'm going someplace, I'm going there expressly to help. I've never been in Waverly or Trans-Allegheny or anywhere because I'm not being asked to go there to help someone. I've done a few things, but I've seen this go the wrong way if you go into the wrong place. I had a case 5 years ago where a brand new team in Germany, they were out in the forest and they were visited by an entity that they thought was the Green Man, a pagan representation of nature, who said, oh, there's something evil in that school over there. You should go check it out. And they decided to bring the public into that location without checking it out. Oh, man. It was a Nazi girls' school that was then used to store V2 rockets, and it was used for mystical rites in the basement. And there was this skeletal apparition of a girl that appeared to one of the women who came into that building as a guest, and then it started attacking people who were involved with this group. Even before the group got to the whatever case that was, it threw a woman's husband down the stairs. It tried to pull another woman out of her or woman's daughter, excuse me, out of her bed. And they came to me trying to get help. And I said, everybody go get baptized again, because baptism is a minor form of exorcism. It will wash away attachments. I've learned other ways to do it since then, but that was the quickest way I could tell them to do it at that time. I've been in a lot of haunted locations in my life, many hundreds more, but I don't go into those places with the intention of just having fun. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying anything against you guys, I promise.
Oh, I wasn't having fun. Trust me.
No, Erica's not. I go for the history. Again, I went there to go into the history of the asylum, and also it's a Kirkbride, so it's amazing architecture, stuff like that. And that's what I go for. And again, to get the history of some of the cases and stuff like that. And I do love when we go there, they do love pointing out, okay, so This is the room where the ghost adventurers found their ghost, but our ghost is over here. Yeah. It's just, I love that they have to separate the reality from the things. And
yeah, I don't want to get into ghost adventures.
No, the truth is
any of those reality programs, they're there for entertainment. Please, yeah. Folks, I can't tell you how many well-meaning people think that they're learning something and then they go off trying to run their own investigations. It's like watching Grey's Anatomy and thinking you know how to practice medicine. Please do not do that. Do it right. Really learn something before you try to go out and, you know, truly affect people's lives.
What would you say the percentage of cases that you go out to investigate that you find are I want to say easily explainable, like there's bugs in the wall or that person has a bit of mental illness or something like that, that, you know, explains it. And it's not something paranormal, preternatural, that's not an entity of some kind or whatever. It's not an actual, like, it's not something you need to go cleanse necessarily, I guess is the way I'm kind of, you know.
Far more than half. But I do want to point out one thing I learned from the Maurice Thériault case, the Frenchie case, was if there is a negative manifestation, there's going to be an underlying reason why it's happening. So mental illness doesn't rule out the paranormal. It makes it actually more likely. So I'm careful about making that distinction.
I know there are some cases sometimes where people have undiagnosed situations where schizophrenia, stuff like that, or hallucinations, or they're on a medication that they don't realize is causes hallucinations.
Right.
And you don't want to go, yeah, that's an entity. If it's not an entity, it's,
right,
you know, whatever's potentially, you know, going on with them through genetics or what environment, whatever, where it's not that it doesn't open them up. And I could totally see open up or flip case, it causes that to start happening. But I know there's a degree of stuff that happens that I think for a long, long time, we didn't acknowledge that portion of what's happening. Like me and Mark always say, like, okay, you have something happening in your walls. Start with an electrician and pest control. Let's start those two places. Maybe a plumber. And then when all that is ruled out, let's go for the other side of this coin, because we had one wrote us in about a possum, the largest possum they'd ever seen, right, Mark, in their ceiling.
And in their attic, yeah.
Like screeching and whispering, and, you know, you could be like, it's a demon. And no, it was a giant possum and their family, I'm sure, living in their ceiling, right?
But, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. Always rule out the natural before you resort to the supernatural. Even when there's something paranormal going on, I don't like to use the word preternatural, actually. My grandparents used that to only mean negative manifestations.
Okay.
So you're throwing me off with your way of using it. No. You know, that's the thing. There isn't a lexicon for this that's really set in stone. But whenever people believe that something's paranormal, everything becomes paranormal in the house. Yeah. And that's the problem. You can manifest the paranormal just through your own fears and your own beliefs. And I am not saying that it's all in your mind. I am saying literally you will manifest phenomena. Like it will start happening.
About that. We even talk about topas. Like, I mean, we talked about the creepy, because we do not only things, you know, talking about ghosts or hauntings or things like that, but we also talk about, you know, cryptids and monsters and UFOs. And so that's why we like to use that term, because there's all these different things that may have a scientific explanation or may not yet. And so that's why we use that term, because those things aren't necessarily paranormal, right? Like, and so,
or again, a science we don't understand yet that
we've
created them. That's, yeah, you know, we're finding out with the not deer, which is on creepypasta, but now people are seeing it that have no idea what the heck a not deer is.
Well, here's here's the thing. Once it's created, it can manifest.
Yep.
For instance, here's an interesting thing. In Peru alone, there are over 1,000 different types of cryptids. Now, do I believe there are 1,000 different types of unknown magical creatures? No, of course not. I believe that we are storytellers, and when we're faced with that unknown, we will create folklore around it. But the thing is, we will then manifest that. The Slender Man is a great example of something that never existed. It was created online, and now it is appearing in people's homes. Or the Hat Man, or Shadow People. Shadow People is, from my experience growing up, has always been a physical manifestation of a human spirit. They have trouble manifesting fully physically, and so they're shadows. But now that people are differentiating that phenomena, they can be twisting that and turning it into something else. It's like the Phantom Hitchhiker of the 50s and the 60s that would show up all the time. And then we had the black-eyed children phenomena. And we, in the 80s, we had the explosion of the grays that everybody was experiencing that nobody really, well, not many are experiencing today. Do I believe in aliens? Absolutely. Do I believe that there were that many sightings? No. I think that that was another tulpa or egregore manifestation.
Yep. And that's
what Annabelle is. Yeah. You know, it was created by human energy. A poltergeist is created by human energy most of the time. Sometimes it really is just a miserable old man who doesn't want you living in his house. But other times it's an out of control psychic or other kind of human energy that takes on a life of its own, and it can kill. I think that's what a demon is. I'm an exorcist who doesn't believe in demons. I mean,
well, we talk about that a little bit because demons are very much certain religious word, right? And I'm not saying it's wrong or not. I don't know. But I do know that not everything can be a demon, because if you look at other religions, they don't believe in that. There are those of us that, you know, believe in nature spirits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, there aren't quote unquote demons in those belief systems. So what are they? Right.
There are negative energies, and that's exactly what this stuff is. And that's why we talk about this stuff, is it's, if it's that negative and then you give it more power, guess what? It's going to get something. It's going to be worse. So you're feeding
it. And you give it the face that it takes. These things are not truly intelligent in my experience. And by the way, I want to make it clear, I am not an expert. Everything I'm talking about is theory, and the theories have changed over time, and they're going to continue to change. So anybody who's watching this in 2040, who's saying, hey, look at what Chris said, no, you're wrong. That's not what I meant.
At this point in time, this is our snapshot. This is our snapshot at this point in time. This is what we think. Yeah.
Exactly. But these things are reactive. They're not active. They can have some intelligence, absolutely. I actually had to do an exorcism on a child in Costa Rica. And that child had never met me and still knew I was on the way to the house, even without knowing I existed. So that kind of thing can happen. But again, it's more reactive. It's like the other people in the house were aware I was coming, and she could have picked up on that telepathically or what have you.
Yeah. And that's again, there's good in this too. There's positive energy as well. That's why I like to say, hey, you never know with these things, because there's bad, but there's been places I've been, the terrible stuff has happened, but feels perfectly at peace now because something changed. Somebody came and cleansed it, or something else happened. I found that I'll be honest, it's kind of interesting. I found it at a few government famous locations. I'm like, wait a minute, Andersonville should be terrible, and it feels fantastic. So something happened there. So, but that's cool. Have you had any positive ones you want to discuss?
Oh God, yes, so many. But here, you made me think of this one, and I don't know that I've ever talked about this that much. I was in a private museum in Mexico several years ago with a team. And in the downstairs, there was this woman who had been accused of murdering a child, and then she killed herself. Now, I was able to communicate with that woman, and there was, long story short, she didn't kill the child, but she felt guilty about the child's death and took her own life. But when we went upstairs, there were mummies, and because Mexican burial law is weird. If you don't pay every 5 years to keep the body in the ground, then they'll dig them up and either destroy them or put them on display. And there were mummies up there. There were whole, of course, haunted dolls. It's always dolls. Yeah. But the energy was awful in there. And I mean, I was overwhelmed. I had to keep walking out onto the roof. There was a doorway out onto a terrace to get away from it. But then we went into this one room, and there's this big, beautiful painting of this Mexican revolutionary leader. And his sword was in an umbrella stand underneath it. And I said, do you mind if I hold that? And I thought, you know, I'm going to feel something bloody and awful, and this is not going to be good, but I want to hold it anyway. As soon as I held it, all I felt was peace, honor, strength. I was like, wow. Hey, can I hold this for the rest of the time I'm here? And they said, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, that's it. It's, again, you know, intention and power, you know, and energy is everything. So, oh my gosh. Absolutely. Wow.
Yeah.
Why do you think people always say it's dolls? I have always had the theory that it's because they're the most like a human form in a way in the physical, besides human forms. Obviously, mannequins too, because there are sometimes like, I'm like, yeah, you know.
Here's my theory. Just my theory. What is it that we love the most that's a physical object? What do we pour the most energy into?
No, it's stuffed animals and stuff, yeah.
Stuffed animals, dolls, things like that. Even me growing up, I had my action figures, and I put those in bed with me to protect me when I was asleep from those ghoulies and ghosties.
Yeah. Yo-yo.
With Kung Fu Grip.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's why we get attached to them. We give them personalities. We give them a story, and that's what shapes them. It's that story. We are so powerful. That's what I've learned from the paranormal. It is empowering. Yes, your fears can be devastating and they can kill, but let go of your fear and you can accomplish just about anything. It is extraordinary.
It's interesting you say that, because the popularity of haunted attractions and like Halloween Horror Night and stuff like that, there is, I feel like, a bit of an addiction to that adrenaline you get from being afraid, because not a lot of things create that same, you know, release of endorphin. I don't know. I'm sure there's medical science stuff that goes with that, but it's interesting because, you know, people want to celebrate, but people put more effort into, it's almost like, a drug, and I don't mean it that way, but
it's an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, it can get addicting to be scared, right?
Yes,
it's that serotonin, adrenaline, all that. Yep. The brain works that way.
And the problem with that is we're now opening up places that are dangerous to the public, as though this is just an attraction. It isn't. And people don't understand that. And they're going in there innocently thinking it's actually safe when it's not. Mm-hmm. If you're going into a haunted prison or a haunted hospital, and don't get me wrong, almost every hospital in the world is haunted.
I was going to say, yes, that has been my
Yeah. Yeah. But if you're going into those places, protect yourself before and after. Set spiritual guidelines. Basically, same thing as when you set personal boundaries. You know, hey, I'm here to help. Only while I'm here am I going to interact with you. You cannot follow me home. You know, don't get into my personal space. Do not try to touch me. Just like I would say to anybody else who was trying to get too close to me. You know, and if they're a normal person, that's going to work. If they're a disturbed person, like in an asylum or a prison, no matter what you say, you're throwing away your protection just by going into there. So be very, very careful and learn how to protect yourself afterward or get a hold of me.
There we go.
Absolutely. And I do that. So just for the record, going into these places, Mark and Bo can tell you, I have all kinds of protections that I do before I travel, do anything.
Benny from The Mummy, where she's got the necklace with every charm she can possibly have.
those are things that focus your faith and intention. They work.
Yep. And that's how it goes. And all right, so
you've got crystals that actually do channel energy in different ways.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. I have an entire thing.
We've got haunted locations on geodes and things like that that are, you know, we don't understand how it works. So, but it does, it affects things. That's how it is. So, all right. So we're getting here along.
I have one more question. And then
go ahead.
It's kind of a weird question. I hope, Chris, some of these have been questions that you don't get asked a lot. So,
no, this has been fun. I've enjoyed it.
I have a theory. It is, people call it, what do they call it? Imaginary friends, but I call them invisible friends for children. I had one myself growing up, and I feel like it's because when we're younger, we don't have those built in, like, this isn't a thing. This is your, you know, like the negative blocks that can be put in place by being told what your reality should be when you're younger. That is the best way I can say it. How do you feel about invisible friends? What have you encountered through your life on that? Now, whether they're actually friendly or not is a different topic. I'm just saying that term.
Right. Well, here's the thing. When you're a child, your neuroplasticity is very high. That means that you're still rewiring your brain. You're still opening pathways. It's still very fresh. And you can rewire things easily. As you get older, they calcify and they become channeled in ways that are very familiar to your brain. So you're no longer open to new things. A child is very gifted, very psychic, but we can teach them, sadly, to be blind. And that's what we often do. As you get older, you can still retrain your brain. People who have traumatic brain injury can recover and learn to use different parts of their brain. And you can develop psychic abilities. It isn't something that anybody is incapable of. But just like anybody can dribble a basketball, not everybody can be Michael Jordan. You know, there are certain people who are going to be far more gifted than others. But if you practice, for instance, divining rods or tarot cards or pendulum or automatic writing, whatever tool you use, if you keep at it, you're training your brain to use that to reveal what it's actually going on inside your head. It's not the cards that have any power, it's you. And I believe that children have spirits around them, especially when they're young. Because your loved ones who've passed on, they're excited to see them grow up. It's very common for a grandparent or a great-grandparent to be there. Even before they die, they may be visiting because they're slipping out of their body. And those deathbed visits are common. Invisible friends, I believe, can be that kind of thing. Now, do I think that they can also be imaginary? Absolutely. You know, children are imaginative. I had, you know, me and my friend, we used to make believe we had people we were interacting with, and we knew they weren't real, but we acted like they were. Yeah. You know, so that can be different as well.
Like I said, many cases involve younger folks, especially, you know, early teens and stuff like that, where the brain is changing again and everything's changing.
Plus, they have a lot of they're more fresh and more, everything's over the top for them. So they're throwing off a lot more EMF. And I think that is one of the things that is key to manifestations, is that energy level.
Yeah.
No, it makes sense. I was just curious your theory on these things, because, you know, you've had a different level of experience than I have. Okay, so Mark, I will now let you ask your question.
All right, I got to say, you've had cases that have really thrown you. You've had cases that have been, you know, just have been documented pretty well, but you also have private cases, right? Mm-hmm. And then those, I get asked a lot. It's like, hey, how come you don't talk about this place? How come you don't talk about it? I'm like, they're not, they don't want public, you know, information and all that. So I go back to your grandparents. They talked about how the press is a double-edged sword. It can be good, it can be bad. And that's so your opinion on that. Again, you've got movies now, so a lot more people are interested. The, you know, the reality shows make people more interested, but that's a good and bad thing.
I don't have any movies. That's not
I mean, I'm talking about the world has, I'm sorry, the world has these movies and TV shows now. So
I know. Look, that was something I clashed with my grandfather about back in the day. I remember going to a case in Tewksbury, Massachusetts, where the lady had called the police to report strange phenomena, and it went on the police blotter. The newspaper picked it up, and the town went crazy. There were hundreds of cars in this little neighborhood trying to get into this house when I arrived, and I realized how damaging the publicity can be to a family. They're already going through hell. They don't need that. Yeah. I don't advertise any of my private cases. I will talk about the famous ones that have already been revealed, or I will talk about things in such a way that you'll never be able to identify who I'm talking about, because I want to protect the people I'm serving, and I am serving them. You know, I am not there to get my 3-second video of a coffee cup flying across the room. I could give a damn if I ever show anybody anything like that. That is not what I'm in this for. You know, I'm not here to prove anything to anybody. If you don't believe, great. That means you're probably more protected than the person who does believe. They're more open to it. So your skepticism is your armor. It may not last. I mean, even the dad who doesn't believe in the household where the kids and the mom are getting attacked, eventually he's going to start believing too, and that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's the, when you got that door closed, and then suddenly it gets ripped off your its hinges. You know, you're a lot more trouble than if you just let it crack open and blow open. So
yeah.
Oh my gosh, Chris, thank you so much.
This
has been amazing. So.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. I just would like to say though, if anybody needs help, please warrenlegacyfoundation.com, or just find me on Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook. I will be happy to chat with you and help you if I can. If you'd like to learn more, I do hold a seminar once a month on Zoom, and that's available as well. I'm actually doing one for Halloween. That's normally I do them, which are very theory-based. Don't get me wrong, there's still lots of ghost stories and everything else, but I want to educate. But for Halloween, I'm just going to go straight entertainment and terrify people.
Yeah, oh, man.
That, yeah, no, we should absolutely tune in for that. And then when you're saying TikTok and all that, is that at Warren Files?
At Warren Files, I believe so, yes. I mean, you go to Chris McKinnell on Facebook or the Warren Legacy Foundation on Facebook. At Warren Files is on Instagram, and I believe it's the same on TikTok. If you search for, yes, it is. It's at Warren Files on TikTok as well.
Good. And we're going to include all the links in our show notes so that everybody can grab those and stuff like that. So, Chris, it has been fantastic to meet you. This has been so much fun.
Well, thank you. It was wonderful meeting you. Mark, it's nice seeing you again.
Yeah.
This is my kind of program. Eerie Travels is my thing, you know?
Good, good.
Oh, and we gotta... before we go, where is a place you would recommend that people travel? Not for paranormal, but just to go, you got to go see this.
Peru, Portugal, Spain, Nepal, Thailand, Scotland. God, Prague. Prague, New Zealand. Egypt. Just do not go to Israel. That is, I have never been any place more hate-filled and sad and terrifying, really. I mean, I was there during the first Palestinian uprising, and I walked into bombings, but other than that, it was still hard. But I live in Paraguay, and right now, it's a quiet, friendly country here in South America. Most people confuse with Uruguay. There's not a lot to see here, but it's a wonderful country. But Peru, wow. And Colombia. Oh, I fell in love with Colombia. Mexico, it can be dangerous. That's true. But it's so rich in history and culture, and the people are amazing. They are the, I love the Mexican people. And if you love spicy food, it's a great place to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mexican street corn, I still miss it from my time in Mexico City. I'm like, every time I go, somebody's like, oh, we got Mexican street corn. I'm like, no, you don't.
No, and you don't have tacos in the United States unless maybe you're on the border or something. Oh, the tacos are so amazing down there. Or up there, excuse me, where I am.
You're a little further down, yeah.
I was about to say, we just turned this into Erie Travels, the food edition. Hey, so
we bring Chris back. We'll do that. That's our next one. That's all, all talking food.
I could talk well over an hour just on that.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we would love to have you back. This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
That was my honor. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you to all of our patrons, too, who support us, all travelers out there. Don't forget to check ErieTravels.com. It's got all of our locations we're going to be and fun stuff there. And then we always sign off, Chris, with an amazing bit of advice from Mark. So, Mark.
Again, travelers, when you're out there traveling the world and you go to spooky locations, remember, protect yourself. Say good things. Don't invite anything home. Make sure you're good to go. Make sure you just think positive thoughts. And then if it is scary, reach out to the Warren Legacy Foundation and we'll see you on the other side.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.